Hello and welcome to Pitchside with Toby Reynolds, a Sports Gazette podcast, where each episode we take a deep dive into a new sporting topic with a new guest. I'm your host Toby, and this week I'll be joined by Emil New to discuss the upcoming 2024 F1 season and who Max Verstappen's biggest challenger could be. Emil is the motorsports editor at the Sports Gazette, and after Lewis Hamilton's announcement, he's questioning his allegiances. Throughout this episode, we look at Mercedes' chances of getting close to Red Bull in Hamilton's last season, whether Leclerc and Sainz have what it takes to become a world champion, and if McLaren can continue their upwards trajectory from the summer break, as well as some predictions for the season ahead. I'm now joined by Emil. How are you, mate?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. And you?
Yeah, good, thanks. Yeah, excited to get into this bit of F1 talk. It'll be the first F1 podcast. It should be an exciting one. The best place to start is with Max Verstappen. He's the world champion at the moment. He's won it three times in a row and won it every season more convincingly than the last. How good do you expect him to be over the next year?
The season we saw from Max was just unbelievable. I mean, he's just so relentless in every single session, you know, every practice session, every qualifying session. The amount of points that he got. I mean, he won the Constructors by 166 points, won the Drivers' Championship by 290 points, 19 out of 22 races. So, I mean, realistically, the best person to fight Max would be his teammate, right? Because they've got the same machinery. But I think this year, what we saw from, you know, Checo is that, you know, in the first four races, it kind of looked like he was actually going to mount a title fight. And then in Miami, when Max started ninth and Checo was on pole, I think that was really the race where it's like, okay, can he actually do this? If he converts this, then he can really kick on and, you know, extend his championship lead. And obviously Max came and won by, you know, 5+ seconds. And I think that was kind of like, you know, the dagger that made us realize, oh, okay, maybe this is, you know, out of his reach. But yeah, Max, I mean, when it comes down to raw speed, you know, maybe there's only Leclerc over, you know, one lap that can challenge him, but he's just so consistent in every session. I think I heard Christian Horner say that outside of a scratch on his front wing in Silverstone, he didn't, you know, cause them a single penny of damage the whole season. So, yeah, I mean, he's going to take some stopping this year.
No, definitely. Do you think that Sergio Perez, from the Red Bull perspective, will have any chance at all? And if not, do you think that Red Bull might look to make a change at some point during the season or looking forward into the future?
Yeah, I mean, for Perez, it's a massive year. Like, it's a massive year because, you know, it's funny how quick time flies, right? Like, I mean, in the first four races last season, people were talking about him fighting for the title. And then, you know, getting towards the summer break and beyond, people were questioning whether he was going to keep his seat. He had a better end to the year. But even though he did, his problem was in qualifying. I mean, I think Perez missed out on Q3 for six straight races. And he had the quickest car that was ever built in the history of Formula One. And that's not opinion, that's fact. The stats say that. So I think for Checo this year, he has to improve his qualifying, first of all, because, you know, he got away with it this year because Red Bull was so far ahead of every other car. But he's not going to, you know, ultimately, the pack are going to catch up and they're going to need Checo to be right up there with Max, you know, if they're to get the Constructors' Championship again. And if they just defend off all the challenges which are going to come from all angles. I think this year, if he has a year like last year, then Red Bull, I think, could change midway through the season. We've seen them do it before. You know, we saw them with Gasly a few years ago in 2019 when they got rid of Gasly for Alex Albon. We saw them get rid of Alex Albon for Checo. So, you know, Red Bull aren't afraid to make changes. We saw them do it with Danny Kvyat, you know, way back in 2016 when they put Max in the car. Max is actually a beneficiary of a mid-season change. So, I mean, he's going to have to get his act together, definitely, because if he doesn't, I definitely think that they will change midway through the season.
And I mean, it wasn't really much of an effect on the Red Bull season last year, but they broke the cost cap a couple of years ago and have therefore got less wind tunnel time and got fined and everything around that. Do you think that might come more into an effect of to how it might change their development throughout this season? Or do you think they're so far ahead still from last year that actually the sort of the negative effects from breaking the cost cap, and their punishment won't actually affect them.
Well, yeah, it's interesting because Red Bull, their cost cap breach was for the 2021 season, which of course Max won the Drivers' Championship. It was discovered in 2022 that they broke the cost cap. Ultimately, them breaking the cost cap, so they got 25% less wind tunnel time and a $7 million fine, which doesn't really mean anything to a an organization as big as Red Bull. But that cost cap breach should have affected them this season. And obviously, they've won 22 out of 23 races, and it's been the most dominant season by a team in F1 history statistically. So it doesn't seem that it actually did, hinder them or affect them in any way. Obviously, me being a Mercedes fan, I wish it could have, and I thought that maybe the penalty should have been a bit harsher because, ultimately, Red Bull are so far ahead. On average, in 2023, Red Bull's race pace was quicker than it was in 2022. Compared to the rest of the field, even though the rest of the field are closing up. So, ultimately it didn't really affect them. Going into the future, whether it's going to affect them, it's going to be hard to tell because, reportedly Red Bull have already started working on their car for 2025. They stopped development on their 2023 car in August. Yet in the last race in Dubai, Max still won by 16 seconds. So the advantage is still, they still got a mighty advantage. And, even if, in a theoretical world, their punishment was bigger, I still don't think it affect them that much because right now they've just aced these new regulations and they're so far ahead of the pack.
Now, their biggest challenge last year, which wasn't really much, were Mercedes, who came second in the constructors' title. Probably didn't really ever have the second fastest car. They were just a beneficiary of probably being the third fastest throughout the whole season. And actually, the second fastest seemed to fluctuate, starting with Aston, then maybe Ferrari for a bit, and McLaren towards the end after the summer break. Do you think that Mercedes will be able to get back to their winning ways that they had for such a long period of the 2010s?
Yeah, I mean, with Mercedes, it's so crazy now. Like, it's just some people who have probably been watching Formula One who all they knew was Mercedes winning championships. And I remember in the first race of 2022 or in testing in 2022 when everyone rocked up to the grid and they saw a Mercedes car with no side pods, they thought they've done it again, haven't they? They've jumped the gun again. They've got us all. But obviously, it didn't prove out to be that way. I think what the problem with Mercedes is that they came in with this zero side pod concept, and obviously they had the porpoising throughout 2022. It didn't work, and obviously Red Bull stopped developing their car at the end of 2022. But because Mercedes carried on with development towards the end of 2022, obviously George, he got his victory in Brazil, and I think that kind of gave Mercedes confidence and kind of gave them kind of a false representation and a false notion that maybe this concept would work. So they kept it with 2023. And then we came into Bahrain and saw that, it was a disaster, in all honesty. So, yeah, they've gone away from that concept. They've come back to a more Red Bullish concept, if you'd like, even though, James Allison didn't like to call it, or Toto didn't like to call it a Red Bull concept. He actually said in an interview, if it looked like a double decker bus and it was fast, we'd make it look like a double decker bus. But the problem Mercedes have is that there's a lot of expectation around Mercedes. And I feel like the media are really, clamoring for them to be back challenging Red Bull. But the truth is they haven't really got, they haven't got it with these regulations. What they've got is two, outstanding drivers in Hamilton and Russell who absolutely got everything out of the car. And that's the main reason why they did finish second in the constructors. But I mean, you look at the end of the season, Brazil horror show. Russell DNF, Hamilton finishing out of the points. They had cars like Haas's and AlphaTauri's ahead of them. Dubai, comfortably the fourth quickest car. So going into 2024, you look at Mercedes and really think, yeah, we'd love them to challenge, but how realistic is it? Obviously, this year we've seen a bit of friction between Hamilton and Russell as well, like we did in Japan, in Suzuka, when they, got wheel to wheel, got quite close, in Qatar, when they obviously came together on lap one. So I think that's kind of the lesser issue. The biggest issue is they just need to make the car quicker, by any means necessary, because Hamilton hasn't won a race in 2 seasons now, and I think if he goes this season again without winning a race, even though both of them have contracts to the end of 2025, he's going to get restless. he's going to start looking elsewhere if they don't get their act together.
Hey guys, Toby here with my editor cap on at the moment. So me and Emil recorded the podcast a few weeks ago. Since then, obviously, some big news came out that Mercedes will be losing Lewis Hamilton at the end of this season, and he's moving to Ferrari for 2025. I'm joined by Emil now in person, and I think we have to touch upon it a little bit. How do you think the move might affect his season, the upcoming one, where he'll still be driving for Mercedes?
Yeah, I mean, when this news broke is probably the biggest shock move since, I don't know, maybe you have to go back to 95 when Schumacher decided to leave Benetton as a world champion to go to Ferrari. But it's going to be an interesting one because the thing about Hamilton, that he's been at Mercedes now, I mean, he's entering his 12th season. He's so embedded into the team. And, you know, like a lot of people have been saying, it's not the fact he decided to move, but it's the fact he's decided to announce it before he's even jumped into the W15. I think where the relationship and the ties are so strong between Hamilton and Mercedes, in a normal situation with any other driver, you'd see them start to pull back from that driver, right? You'd see them withholding information. You'd probably see them getting less favorable strategies in races. Even though theoretically that's what should happen, I can't imagine Mercedes going to that length just because of the, you know, relationship and the connection and what they've achieved together with Hamilton. I don't think they'd want to end what's been, you know, the most dominant driver team pairing in history in a kind of, you know, frictious kind of way. I think what I'm interested to see is how Hamilton performs this season, because, you know, in 2022, after, you know, all the antics of 2021, he kind of struggled and he had a bit of a down year. Last year, he came back and performed really well. I don't doubt a seven-time world champion's focus is ever going to go, but I'm just intrigued to see if this season he kind of carries on from last season and puts in those strong performances. Because Russell, I mean, Russell's a top driver, so he's going to be pushing him all the way.
What do you think will happen, for example, if maybe Mercedes somehow gains an extra couple of seconds or Ferrari might slow down a little bit? Do you think he's going to handle it well and maybe he realises he's got the wrong car for 2025?
Well, I mean, that's when he made the move from McLaren to Mercedes in 2013, that was a, you know, an absolute masterstroke. It's going to be interesting to see this season how you know, how Mercedes do perform, because at the end of the day, he's made the jump quite early. I mean, I remember back in 2020 when Sainz left McLaren, signed before the season started to go to Ferrari. But I mean, this just seems really early. He must have jumped into the W15 on the simulator and seen something that he wasn't happy with, or, you know, still not happy with how he's feeling. But it's going to be interesting because if Mercedes, at the end of the day, they did finish second in the Constructors last year. I don't think that if you look at the season as a whole, that they had the second quickest car. I think Hamilton and Russell just extracted absolutely everything they could from the car. But there's actually data that showed that Ferrari last year did have the second quickest car when you take into consideration the different types of tracks. When you're going to low downforce in Monaco, high downforce in Monaco, you go to low downforce tracks such as Monza, Ferrari did overall have the second quickest package. But if Mercedes jumped them this year, I mean, that's going to be an interesting dynamic. But I do think that sometimes it gets underestimated how much these world-class drivers do have input into pushing the progress of the car forward. So I think that even if Mercedes do make that big step this year and they do kind of solidify themselves as second behind Red Bull, Hamilton's goal isn't second at the end of the day. He wants to win the championship. So I think that's why he's made this move. So I think if Mercedes do come out the blocks firing this year and they are, you know, massively quick, I still have confidence that Hamilton could go to Ferrari and still push them forward, even if they do make a slight dip this year.
I mean, he's probably thinking about 2026 and the new regulation changes as well,
yeah,
which obviously be a big factor. The big question now, though, is who is going to be his replacement at Mercedes? Do you have any thoughts on this? Who maybe you'd put in and maybe who you think is most likely to be?
Yeah, well, I mean, apparently Toto straight away picked up the phone to Fernando Alonso, got Fernando Alonso on the other side of the phone, which I don't blame him for. I actually saw a stat, it's the first time that Mercedes won't have a world champion driving in their car if they don't get Alonso, because they had Schumacher when they came in, obviously then they had Hamilton after that. But I think Alex Albon will be right up there. I think Albon and Russell will be such an interesting combination because, I mean, Albon's stock's high right now. He's gone to Williams. He had an amazing year last year. Obviously, it didn't work out for him at Red Bull. But, you know, he even surprised me last year, Albon, to be honest, because he put in some amazing performances. But, you know, it is a different level of pressure in Mercedes. It is a slightly different spotlight. And at the end of the day, Russell is a very strong driver. I do think that whoever goes in the car, I don't know if they would be as quick as Russell. I don't know if they'd beat him. But if I'm Mercedes, I think that obviously I know that they've got youngsters coming through, but I'd be a bit hesitant just now to put them straight in. So I think for me, I'd want to see Alonso in the car. I'd love to see Alonso in the car because I'd just be intrigued to see how that dynamic would work. And I'd be intrigued to see Alonso working with Toto Wolff. I'd just like to see that dynamic. But that's what I want to see in the car. But I can't see Alonso committing. I think I was actually listening to Alonso speaking to Craig Slater, Sky Sports F1 correspondent, just this morning, and Alonso was saying that Aston Martin will be his first priority, or the first team that he speaks to because his contract expires at the end of this year. So I'd want to see Alonso in there, but I think maybe they might go the Albon route. One last thing is that obviously Carlos Sainz, who's Hamilton's place is taken, he could be a shout, but obviously Sainz's dad has close ties with Audi, who are coming in at 26. So does he make that jump? Mercedes probably wouldn't want to take Sainz just for 1 year before 26 if they think he's going to jump to Audi. So it's the floodgates are open right now.
It's going to be absolutely crazy. I mean, we'll have to get you on back on in the summer for some silly season chat, maybe.
Definitely.
But thank you, Emil. Make sure you guys head over and give Emil's article a read on the Sports Gazette website, talking about Hamilton and his move and everything around it. And yeah, we'll get back to the original recording now. Yeah, I find it quite interesting if he does think about moving, because I would say that Mercedes probably have the strongest driver lineup on the grid. I mean, Ferrari and McLarens are both pretty good as well. Red Bull's a bit one-sided for my liking, but that's the way they do things. Do you think that Mercedes could improve their lineup if Hamilton were to leave, or if Russell were to leave, or do you think that actually they have a very good lineup as it is?
I think Mercedes are in the, undesirable position because they've got two solid drivers. Don't get me wrong, Russell didn't have the greatest year this year and he made some mistakes. I mean, I remember when he crashed on the last lap in Singapore, that I almost couldn't believe it. But Russell's a solid driver. I mean, when we look at some of the things that he done in the Williams, qualifying in getting to Q3 in 2020 in Belgium, I remember. A third in sorry, in the Hungaroring, P3 in Belgium in 2020. Some of the performances he had were unbelievable. And again, he's actually the one that's won a race in this new generation for Mercedes. So I think that the driver lineup is strong. I don't think Russell will be going anywhere because I think they see Russell as the future. And I think Hamilton is the symbolic, he is Mercedes, right? In a way, I think he's so tied with Mercedes. Some of his off-field ventures are tied with Mercedes. And I think there's that connection with Mercedes. And I feel like they almost feel like they owe Hamilton one more championship fight. So even if the car was to be quick, it'd be interesting to see how the dynamic worked out, whether they would be to favor him or not. If he was to leave, which would be kind of sad to see because it would be nice to see him win, an eighth with Mercedes. Some of the drivers in line, I mean, you've got obviously Mick Schumacher, who was a reserve driver, but again, is he quick enough? Obviously, he's got that second name behind him, which adds massive pressure, but even though Toto Wolff has been talking about Mick, needing to get a seat on the grid, if Mercedes seat opened, it'd be interesting to see whether he'd be willing to give him that seat because I don't think he's quite at the level. But yeah, I mean, I think that they've got two solid drivers, which is a bigger onus for them to make sure that they get this car up to speed so they don't kind of waste this window that they have right now.
Of the two drivers, who do you think would be more likely to challenge if they do get a fast car next season?
I think, in my opinion, that even though, I think Russell has the pace, right now, Verstappen is the yardstick, is the measuring stick. He's the yardstick that you have to go against. And what we've seen with Verstappen is that you have to be relentless every practice session, every qualifying session. And I'm not saying Russell couldn't be, but we've already watched him and Hamilton, go through a grueling championship battle. And I think what was more impressive about Verstappen and Hamilton's battle in 2021 is that, and I've said this before, to my friends a couple of times, that Verstappen, I feel, was the quickest driver in 2021, but Hamilton basically was an inch away from winning it off pure know-how, off pure experience, almost not obviously off speed, but I think Verstappen was quicker that year and Hamilton done it off all of experience, off all of his years in Formula One. So I think Hamilton, given the car, can definitely do it again. We saw it with his pole in Hungary. We saw it with his third place finish this year in the Drivers' Championship. I feel last year he kind of had a hangover from 2021 and was still recovering from it, you know, emotionally and mentally. And this year, you know, he's just come back to like that. I mean, he's absolutely, him and Alonso, what they got out of their cars, you know, was almost just as impressive as Verstappen. It's only their cars not as quick as Verstappen's. So it doesn't look as, you know, eye-catching, but I think definitely Hamilton would probably be in a better position to challenge Max if the car was quick enough. But yeah, now they just got to make sure that they get the car quick enough. But it's going to be difficult because, you know, I think Red Bull probably started working on their 2020, they stopped developing their 2023 car in August. Their 2024 car was probably done by September, October, rumored to be already starting 2025. And right now they've got Max who's just firing on all cylinders. So it'll be tough, but I think Hamilton can do it if given a car.
Yeah, I find it the sort of Lewis Hamilton development since he sort of began driving back in the sort of mid 2000s really interesting in the way that when he first burst onto the scene, very similar to Max, he was really raw and had a lot of pace. But since then, he has had so much consistency similar to Max over the last couple of years. And I mean, you look at how he won all of those titles, what from back in 2014 when he won his first, all the way to 2021 when he almost won. And he was just so consistent throughout that period that that was almost his biggest strength. And if he gets a fast car, I think that will almost be what he can use to his advantage to try and get back alongside Max and maybe win his eighth title. And I mean, he was obviously fantastic. And the only reason actually Mercedes probably beat Ferrari in what was definitely a slower car last season was because of his consistency. Ferrari finished just 3 points behind Mercedes in the end and had very, very good sort of end to the season as well, but were very up and down throughout. Carlos Sainz was the only race winner who wasn't in a Red Bull as well. What do you make of Ferrari's chances in 2024?
You know, Ferrari, they're so frustrating, Ferrari. They just frustrate you. I couldn't imagine being a Ferrari fan because I just feel that Ferrari, they haven't capitalized on the car that they have in this generation. Ferrari have consistently, they've had an amazing package. They've had a fast car. This year, their car was quick. 2022, for the first half of the season, they had the quickest car, but they just have failed to capitalize on it. And you know, in Leclerc, they've got a driver who, yeah, he challenged Max in 2022. I wouldn't call it a championship fight because he didn't keep it, you know, he didn't sustain it throughout the whole season. But I think what they've got a driver in Leclerc who's really fast. I mean, maybe arguably the fastest driver. Well, you know, the fastest driver in Formula One over one lap. You know, he's got 23 pole positions, the most pole positions of any driver to not win a world championship. But his problem is consistency. His problem is he needs to, you know, stop putting it in the wall all the time. You know, Verstappen's converted more Leclerc pole positions than Leclerc has. It's crazy. I think 23 poles, 5 wins. So obviously, you know, he's just recently signed just a few days ago now. Reports in Italy were saying that it's till 2029. I think Ferrari in their statement just said, you know, multi-year deal. But yeah, I think for Ferrari, it's all angles, you know. They need to get their pit stops better. They need better strategies. They need Leclerc to stop putting it in the wall. You know, Sainz, opposite to Leclerc, Sainz almost has strengths that Leclerc doesn't. You know, I think Sainz has the consistency. Sainz, I think, is more sure of himself in the car. You hear him a lot of the time on the radio, you know, often telling the team, you know, how to go in terms of strategy. We saw that in Singapore when he went on to win the race. So if you almost combine Sainz and Leclerc in a way, you'd have the perfect driver who could challenge Max. But I think what Ferrari need to do is just take advantage of the package that they've got because they've got a quick car. I remember Ferrari were talking about 2022, right back from 2020. Ferrari were talking about 2022. And then throughout this season, Ferrari basically just said, okay, we're dropping everything and we're focusing on next year. And it's like, well, you put so much into this new generation of car because Mercedes were dominating the previous generation. And now, a year and a half in, you're already almost just giving up and saying, oh, you know, we're going to focus on 2024. We're going to look ahead to 2026. Well, you know, when's it going to happen? Because, you know, they haven't had won the Drivers' Championship since Raikkonen did it in 2007. You know, they haven't won a Constructors' Championship, I think, since 2007 or 8. I think even the year they won it was because McLaren got disqualified. So they're obviously they're the only team to compete in every championship since 1950. Historically great team, but I feel that Bonotto, it was harsh for Mattia Bonotto to lose his job last year. I don't think, not to say that Fred Vasseur has done a bad job at all, but yeah, I think that just operationally on all levels, Ferrari just need to get better because they have a quick package.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see if they can ever combine sort of raw pace with which they often seem to have with any sort of stability. And I mean, last season, and it might have been a Fred Vasseur thing that it felt like at times Ferrari weren't just the sort of the joke of the arena. They weren't just, mucking up pit stops. They weren't making stupid calls to try and, double stack when they really didn't need to, or don't pit under a safety car, whatever it might have been for that they'd been doing for the last few years with Matteo Binotto in charge. And I mean, I really think that comparison of Sainz against Leclerc and actually combining them would be a perfect driver, because I mean, Leclerc does seem to be the sort of undisputed number one driver without them saying it explicitly. But for me, Carlos Sainz almost has, like, he almost seems to be the number one driver, the way he conducts himself, the way he makes strategy calls from inside the car, whereas Leclerc is so Ferrari through and through. He just sort of says, well, I'll wait and see what they tell me to do. Do you think that would be a major issue if Ferrari did have a strong car, that they almost might step on each other's toes and Leclerc won't be able to make the big calls and Sainz wouldn't have the pace, and neither of them would ever really quite have it?
I think we kind of saw this a bit in 2022, and what we saw is that Sainz, to be honest, just he didn't have Leclerc's speed. But the problem that Ferrari have is that at the end of the day, only one driver can win the Drivers' Championship. So if Ferrari come in 2024 and have a car that can challenge Red Bull, they need to say, okay, we're going to completely focus all our title efforts on Leclerc, because at the end of the day, he's going to be the one that's going to win us the world championship if we are to win, or that's going to sustain, a season-long challenge with Max. Even though I still have doubts about that, if any Ferrari driver is going to do that, it's going to be Leclerc. And what the problem that the Ferrari have is that they don't, like you said, it's almost Leclerc's the number one driver, but they don't explicitly state it. They have to do that. And it's clear that he's the number one driver. They've just given Leclerc a multi-year contract, signed his contract up at the end of 2024. And right now they've reached a stalemate because Sainz wants a new multi-year deal, and Ferrari are only willing to give him one extra year to the end of 2025. I'm going to keep his seat free, going into the new regulations again in 2026, which shows us that Leclerc is number one and Sainz is number two. But they don't operate as if Leclerc is number one and Sainz is number two when it comes to strategy and all those things. I think they have to do that because if you look at Red Bull, we know who's number one is number two. We know who's going to get the favorable strategy. When Hamilton was winning all those championships, we knew who was number one. Back when Schumacher was winning those championships, I mean, we saw Barrichello slow down and give away race wins to Schumacher. It's harsh, but only one driver can win the Drivers' Championship. And you have to focus all your energy on the driver you have more confidence in to do that. And with Ferrari, it definitely is Leclerc. And maybe if they did that, it would give Leclerc more confidence as well, to maybe stop putting it in the wall and maybe stop making those mistakes. I mean, I remember when Leclerc put it in the wall in Paul Ricard in 2022, my heart sunk because I just thought to myself, you just can't do things like that when you're fighting Max. You can't put the car in the wall when you're leading the race. It just can't do it. You're not going to win a championship like that fighting Max, fighting the Hamiltons of the world, because they just don't make mistakes like that. So I think what Ferrari need to do is just make it. They've made it explicit by giving Leclerc the multi-year deal. Now make it explicit through your strategies, through favouring Leclerc, because you obviously believe in him over Sainz. Even though it's unfortunate for Sainz, because I do think he's a good driver, he has talent, but he just doesn't have Leclerc's raw speed, unfortunately. Which is why, ultimately they'll probably move on from Sainz in the coming year or the year after that. Obviously, they just signed Oliver Bearman. Young British drivers, their reserve driver, so maybe they're readying him to come into Sainz's seat. But yeah, I think that they just need to prioritize with Leclerc this year because they have a fast car. They do have a fast car and they can do it. But they need to believe that, and they need to believe in Leclerc, which will help Leclerc believe in himself, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how they go throughout the next season, I guess. Oh, well, onto the team who probably improved most throughout the 2023 season, McLaren. They started the season absolutely woefully. I mean, Lando Norris P17 in the first race. Oscar Piastri didn't even finish, I don't think, and they looked absolutely rubbish. Cut to what, 8, 9 weeks later, and Lando Norris is flying around, coming, getting sort of podium after podium, and McLaren started to look really formidable and actually probably looked like crazily like the team most likely to catch up with Red Bull at one point, considering they'd basically not finished anything. Cut to a few weeks later, Lando, yeah, back-to-back P2s at Silverstone and Hungary. Do you think that they will continue this rise throughout the next season in 2024?
Yeah, I mean, McLaren, what McLaren done this season? I think what McLaren's season is a total embodiment of these new regulations. I mean, they were the slowest car. I mean, coming into the first race, there was a point when they were bottom of the Constructors' Championship. One upgrade in Austria, bam, McLaren were back all of a sudden. And I think what happened with McLaren is that every upgrade McLaren bought throughout the season worked. It made them faster, which shows that they understood their car. I mean, Andrea Seidl, obviously they restructured their whole technical team. Andrea Stella coming in, being, a technical guy. I mean, that was one of the recruits of the whole season. Because some of their performances from Austria onwards, I remember in the British Grand Prix, Piastri was so unlucky not to get on the podium there. Obviously a safety car, allowed Hamilton to get on the podium. But even though throughout this season there's been points when Aston Martin started off the second quickest, then it was McLaren after Austria. Ferrari had their spell. Mercedes had, bits here and there. McLaren were probably the most consistent challenger behind Red Bull in that middle part of the season, and definitely towards the end of the season as well, when Norris, was just completely on a roll. They've got recruits coming in from Ferrari, recruits coming in from Red Bull. They understand their car. Their car's quick, and to be honest, along with Mercedes, I'd say McLaren have the best driver pairing on the grid in Norris and Piastri. Piastri had a they extended Piastri's contract to the end of 2026 in September of his rookie year, which shows the season he's had. And Norris, we all know, what a talent Norris is. Obviously, it's massive news for McLaren that he's just re-signed to the end of 26 as well, which I think is a big move considering that they've both committed to the first year of the new generation. So I think McLaren, a lot of people, the thing is, McLaren have been a sleeping giant for a long time. Even though Hamilton did win his first championship with McLaren and they were competitive, but barring Hamilton's last few seasons, they're an historically great team and they know how to win championships. And all the people, going into McLaren HQ, they're seeing Senna's MP44, they're seeing all the historically great cars, they're seeing Hamilton's cars. So they're historically are a great team that know how to win championships. They know how to get it done. So I have every faith that McLaren will probably be right up there challenging Red Bull. And I think Red Bull think that as well, because I feel Ferrari have had their chance to challenge. And I feel for McLaren's challenge was more of an honest, legitimate, genuine challenge to Red Bull. We just need Norris to fight Verstappen on track.
Yeah, I mean, Norris's teammate is going to be Oscar Piastri again, and he's locked in for a couple of years as well. How impressed were you with his rookie season? He was unbelievable. Had a year off F1, came in, had a slightly slow start alongside Norris as well, and really stepped it up throughout the season once the McLaren car got so much quicker.
I mean, exactly that. That's the thing. Piastri had a slow start, but Piastri was underperforming in a car that was, terrible, in all honesty, underperforming in the car that was either the slowest or one of the slowest cars on track. Whereas Norris was kind of wrestling it into Q2. But as soon as McLaren bought a competitive package, Piastri was right there, qualified right up there with Norris in Silverstone, got pole position in Qatar and won the sprint. Norris hasn't even won a race of any form yet. Belgium again qualifying in P2 in the sprint, overtaking Verstappen, obviously again overtaken again, but finishing P2 there as well. For me, is one of the most impressive rookie years. And I think what makes it even more impressive is the fact that Piastri put more pressure on himself coming into Formula One with the whole Alpine McLaren saga last year when, McLaren got rid, well, sorry, Alpine got rid of Ricciardo, expecting that they were going to promote Piastri to the seat, not knowing that Piastri had already signed with McLaren, causing that kind of friction as well. Even me, I thought it was kind of like, a lack of loyalty in a sense that, Alpine have brought you up through all the junior formula, spent millions and millions on your development, and you go to McLaren, who was kind of the direct rival at the time. But I mean, one thing about Formula One, when you watch a driver that has pace, you can't not like him, right? And that's what Piastri's brought this year. He's really pushed Norris. And Norris even said, when he re-signed his new contract that Piastri has already pushed him more than Ricciardo or Carlos Sainz did. And Ricciardo and Carlos Sainz are no slouches. So for there were some races, obviously, where Piastri didn't have the pace of Norris, you know, probably in Cota. But for me, that isn't a lack of speed. That's just a lack of experience. And I genuinely think, and I said this, it might sound crazy, but I genuinely think that Piastri could be one of the drivers who could challenge Verstappen in the near future, because the pace that he's shown this year is frightening, honestly. Going up against Lando Norris, who pound for pound is one of the quickest drivers on the grid, you know, and we've seen what he's done to Daniel Ricciardo, who, again, Ricciardo, who has been one of the quickest drivers on the grid, showed that in his days at Red Bull, you know, outperformed Vettel, a four-time world champion, in Vettel's final season. So I really think that Piastri, Norris is definitely going to get his act together, and I think he knows that, because if not, before you worry about winning world championships, you need to worry about beating the guy on the opposite side of the garage, because that's the first guy you need to beat. And I think Piastri's definitely got Norris on his toes now.
On the other end of the spectrum, Aston Martin started the season fantastically with the second quickest car for the first good few races. And I mean, Fernando Alonso looked like he might be the one challenging Max Verstappen for a little bit as well. His partner, Lance Stroll, definitely didn't look like challenging ever, even when Aston had a bit of pace. How do you think that their team and the balance that they have with one world champion driver and one son of the owner driver, how do you think that their lineup might look for next season?
Yeah, well, you know, starting with Alonso, two-time world champion, his start to the season was unbelievable. Alonso made the start to the season such a feel-good start to the season. It was so nice to see Fernando back with a competitive package, you know, six podiums in the first eight races. You know, he had so many years at McLaren with an underperforming package. Obviously, he had that year back at Renault in 2008, 2009 when it wasn't as competitive, but still managed to get, you know, some good results. But it was so great to see Alonso, you know, back among the podium positions, back fighting. But with Aston Martin, it's an interesting one. You know, Mike Crack said at the end of the season interview, you know, Alonso is a straightforward driver to keep happy. You just need to give him a competitive package. And I think Aston Martin, they came with the green Red Bull, if you want to call it. Yeah, you know, they took a lot of inspiration from the Red Bull car. It was kind of similar to 2019 when they rocked up and everyone said they had a pink Mercedes. I think what Aston Martin, the problem with Aston Martin is that they've showed that, and I've had feared this at the beginning of the season, they just weren't able to keep up the development wise. They weren't able to, when the development race started, you know, kicking up steam, they weren't able to keep up. And obviously, in Formula One, if you're not moving forward, you're falling back. Or if you're standing still, you're falling back. And that's what happened with Aston Martin. McLaren overtook them comfortably. Ferrari, who they were jostling with at the beginning of the season, overtook them. Mercedes overtook them, and they had a tough, you know, middle stint to the season. Obviously, for Alonso, it was great to see him back on the podium in Brazil, and his fight with Perez was actually voted the Action of the Year at the FIA Awards, and you could see how buzzing he was. Alonso actually said that this year was his best year ever since in terms of his performance, which I don't think. I still think it was 2012, obviously along with his championship seasons. But I think with Aston Martin, they just need to get development right, because the two times that Aston Martin, you know, previously Racing Point, have been competitive in previous years, you know, in recent years, has been 2019 and this year, 2023, when they've copied or taken great inspiration from the quickest car, but then they failed to kind of understand the concept that they've copied. So they haven't been able to maintain that pace throughout the season. This year, they're going to need to make sure that over the winter they get a good grip on what they're doing, the good, you know, the weak points of their car, the strong points of their car, so they can come with a competitive package one, but they can actually sustain it throughout the season. Because with these new regulations and the way it's tightened up the field, one weekend you're off it, you could be out in Q1. So, you know, they just need to make sure they get on top of that. And I mean, for Stroll's sake, it's difficult for Stroll because everyone's going to say, listen, you know, his dad owns the team. You know, he's on a rolling contract. We don't know how long his contract is. We don't know what he gets paid. You know, it's just that seat's just a given for him. And obviously, if Stroll's, you know, dad didn't own the team, you know, there's no doubt that he wouldn't have been in this seat up until now. But, you know, he has showed that he had pace, you know, with his pole in the 2020 Turkish Grand Prix. He's shown glimpses here and there, you know, in Azerbaijan a few years ago. But this year was tough for him. I think last year when he was up against Vettel, Vettel was kind of on the decline and didn't probably outperform Stroll as we would have expected. But this year, Fernando has just been on a completely different planet for Stroll. And I don't even think Stroll has been disheartened by that because it's just a cold, hard fact. I remember Qatar when he pushed his trainer when he got knocked down in Q1, which I just thought was unacceptable, to be honest. I just thought that was disgusting behavior. Like, you're in the car. Do you go, I mean, these people work for you and they try and get the best out of you, so you can't kind of take out your frustrations on them. I think with Stroll, it's just a case of how long does he want to do it in Formula One until he gets bored? I remember speaking to my brother at a point, and there was rumors that he maybe wanted to start a tennis or something like that. I don't know. I know he has a few interests outside of Formula One. He hadn't obviously had a motorcycle or a bike, an incident on his bicycle before the season. So he came in with a bit of an injury to the season, but still performed well in Bahrain. I think he finished P5 when they still had a competitive package. But it's difficult for Stroll. You know, he's up against Alonso, who's still operating at the top of his game at the young age of 42. So, you know, we'll have to see how it goes.
How much of an issue do you think Lance Stroll might be? I mean, he was quite a long way behind Fernando Alonso in so many ways. But also, that sort of driver lineup is probably the most similar to the Red Bull lineup as well, where you have one dominant lead driver who is obviously number one, and a second driver who's sort of almost there just to mop up the pieces where possible.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great comparison. It literally is Red Bull, but it's so strange because, you know, Lawrence Stroll owns the team. Lance never really has to face the kind of tough questions from the media and the backlash that Checo has to face, you know, of his seat being under pressure. And maybe in a sense, it allows Lance to kind of be a bit lethargic because he knows that is ultimately his future in Formula One isn't under pressure because Lawrence Stroll on the team. I think with Lance, when they had a competitive package, he did show glimmers. But at the end of the day, there was never once throughout the season when Lance was close to Fernando. Never once. And I think that just shows that if Aston Martin were to challenge, it would be for Alonso, right? It would be for Alonso, even though he's 42. It doesn't matter when he gets, you know, in the car and puts his visor down. He's still just as quick as anyone else on the grid, and Lance clearly is a couple of steps below that. So it's interesting. I wonder what kind of people working in the factory and working, you know, on the pit wall and all the engineers feel about Lance still being in the car, because who knows if they actually put, you know, a good promising young driver in the car, what they could do. Felipe Drugovich, you know, the young Brazilian who came in and tested. And was in a few practice sessions last year. He showed good pace. He showed pace that was almost on par with Lance Stroll. So, but he's never going to get the opportunity to go in the seat unless Alonso goes somewhere else, because Lance is always going to have that seat. So, I think with Lance, I hope for his sake that he comes in this season and is a bit more competitive and shows a bit more of his talent, because he is a talented driver. But yeah, this year was just a tough year, I think, for him going up against Fernando.
It's going to be interesting to see. I mean, those are the sort of the top five teams, and then there is almost a bit of a drop off below. Alpine finished over 700 points behind Red Bull. We're finished in sixth. Williams, AlphaTauri, Alfa Romeo, who are now Stake F1 team, and Haas. They, I mean, AlphaTauri are now Visa Cash App RB. Do you think that any of these sort of bottom five teams have any opportunity to break into the sort of the top tier that was those dominant five teams?
You look at Alpine. Alpine, a few years ago, I remember Alpine had a 6-year plan to kind of, you know, get back to the top. Alpine, you know, previously were Renault, previously to that Benetton. They've been a strong team. Obviously, won the two championships under Alonso. They've just kind of lost their way over the years, I feel. They looked promising when they had Sainz and Hülkenberg in there in 2018, and then Ricciardo obviously made the move from Red Bull to Renault, which when they were them still called Renault, when they were clearly the best of the rest, and they've kind of lost their way over the years. Obviously, they got rid of Otmar Szafnauer. I thought he was unlucky to lose his job, but they got rid of him, brought in Bruno Famin. We'll have to see how he does. In Ocon and Gasly, they've kind of got two drivers who are, they're not the upper echelon kind of drivers, but you know, they're still very solid, kind of competent F1 drivers. You know, they brought Zidane in as an ambassador before the season and done all these kind of nice, like flowery things. But I just feel like they're a team that who have lost their way over the years. Obviously, they lost Piastri to McLaren last year. When Alonso left Alpine, he talked about Alpine kind of being a team who was satisfied to just break into the top three rather than go for, you know, the number one position. But I think Alpine, you know, they can make all the changes they want, but ultimately this year their car wasn't quick enough. Teams overtook them. McLaren were way ahead of them. Obviously, Mercedes were ahead of them. Aston Martin came and jumped them. Maybe we'll see if they can jump Aston Martin again this year. But for them, they just need to add pace onto the car because, yeah, we can look at the drivers all we want to. And I think that the driver's done a fairly decent job. But, you know, when the car doesn't have pace, the car doesn't have pace at the end of the day. There's only so much that the drivers can do. So it'll be interesting to see what they can do. You know, Williams again, they made good progress. James Vowles came in from Mercedes. Toto said that he understood Vowles' move, and he said if I was to promote Vowles anymore, he'd have my job. So, but yeah, Williams made a good steps forward. Alex Albon, I was really impressed with Albon. I mean, when he got the seat against Verstappen in Red Bull, when he came in for Gasly, at the beginning he kind of showed some promise, and then I think he started to struggle a bit. But obviously, had a year out of F1, and then Alpine put faith in him, put him back in the car, and he's shown that he's got the potential to, you know, maybe potentially be a lead driver for Williams. I mean, he had a really impressive season. He had 27 of the 28 points throughout the season. Obviously, their problem is they've got Logan Sargeant in the other car. Maybe he was lucky to keep his seat. I mean, they re-signed him after the season. I've never really seen a driver, a team wait to sign a driver after the season. I think if that doesn't show you that they were a bit unsure about him, then nothing else will. But I think Alpine have made, sorry, I think Williams have made good steps forward. And I think James Vowles has brought that kind of expertise. He's brought that experience and know-how into the team. And I think that, you know, they've made leaps and bounds forward. And again, like I said with McLaren earlier, Williams, historically, they're one of the great teams of Formula One who have won multiple drivers and constructors world championships. So yeah, right now it can feel that, you know, they were sitting at the bottom of the grid for so long. And, you know, it's been since 2014 and 15 when they had Massa and Bottas, you know, were the last time that they were really competitive. But again, things change quickly in Formula One, and you just never know. You just never know. So hopefully they can continue to make steps forward, and Albon can continue to make steps forward, and they can be really competitive.
And then finally, Emil, I want a few predictions for the upcoming season. We'll start with who do you think the biggest challenger for Max Verstappen will be?
Listen, Tove, you know, when it comes to sport, sometimes my heart takes over my head. I'm a Hamilton fan, obviously, so I think I'm gonna have to put faith into Mercedes and Hamilton because I just think when it comes into sustaining a title fight for an entire season, I just don't trust Ferrari to do it. I don't trust Ferrari to do it. So I'm gonna go for Mercedes and Hamilton. The only reason I won't say Norris is because I think what we saw this year is that Norris, when it comes to wheel battle against Verstappen, he just doesn't seem to race him as hard as he wants. And I think Verstappen knows mentally that he's got the beating of Norris on track. So a long-winded answer, but I'm going to go for Hamilton and Mercedes.
And then, who do you think the biggest flop might be, or the biggest disappointment?
It's a tough one because for disappointment, you've got to have big expectation. So I'd say maybe I don't want to do it, but maybe the team I have to go for will be Ferrari because Ferrari come into every single season with pressure and with promise and with expectation, but they just seem to underdeliver every single year. And, you know, if the Sainz contract controversy keeps, you know, dragging on, then I think that could be a distraction for them as well. And again, with Ferrari, you just can't trust them. You just can't trust them. They're like the Dallas Cowboys, you know, in the NFL. You know, what can go wrong will go wrong. So unfortunately, I'm going to have to say Ferrari.
And then, what about the biggest surprise? If there is anyone, do you think anyone might be able to, out of nowhere, challenge for the top?
Well, we ended up that off talking, you know, about Williams, and you know, maybe Williams could. Outside of that, it's hard to say bigger surprise because, you know, saying McLaren wouldn't really count as a massive surprise considering how they ended last season as the second quickest car, you know, with Ferrari behind Red Bull. But for me, I think for bigger surprise, I'm gonna go with Piastri mounting a real challenge to Norris, and I think he could potentially beat him this year because, I mean, when that McLaren was competitive last year, outside of COTA and one or two and Brazil, one or two races here and there, Piastri was right there. So I'm going to go for Piastri again making another big step this year, and you know, really taking a fight to Norris.
Okay, and then the big one. Who do you think the world drivers champion and the world constructors champions will be this season?
I just think it's so hard to look past Red Bull. Right now, they've got a driver in Verstappen who's, I mean, he's already cemented himself as one of the all-time greats, three straight championships. I just think that, you know, I can't see Checo in the sister Red Bull challenging him. So the challenge has to come from elsewhere. But for it to come from elsewhere, they have to come with a competitive package. And I just think that from 2021, Verstappen showed that he doesn't even necessarily need the absolute quickest package to win. But when you give him the quickest package, it's basically all but done. Do you get what I mean? You can't catch him. So to go for Verstappen, it's just too hard to look past Verstappen and Red Bull. Constructors will be interesting. I think constructors will depend on how much quicker Red Bull's car is the rest of the field. Because if Checo continues to underperform and they put someone else on the seat, or they decide to put a Ricciardo in the seat, or maybe, you know, give a Liam Lawson a chance, then it'd be interesting to see with constructors. But I think if Verstappen, you know, wins the World Drivers' Championship as dominant fashion as he did in 22 and 23, then, you know, there's no one who can stop them winning both drivers and constructors this year.
Well, thanks so much, Emil, for joining me. We'll make sure to clip up all of your predictions and see how they stand at the end of the year.
Yeah, I mean, oof, I don't normally go too hard predictions, but yeah, we'll see.
Thank you all so much for listening, and make sure you head over and follow us on social media. It's pitchside_podcast on Instagram and TobyReynolds10_ on TikTok and Twitter. Make sure you also head over to the Sports Gazette website to read articles from all of our pundits and writers here at the Sports Gazette. Make sure you like the podcast and give it a rating. It really does help. And make sure to join us next time on Pitchside with Toby Reynolds.